Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is January the 23rd. We are in Shmuel. We are up to Perek Vav, Chapter 6, which is going to be how the Plishtim rid themselves of this pesky Aron, as they would call it. But before we do that, I want to take you through and show you a very interesting pattern. Now, I'll warn you that although the pattern will be interesting and will almost be self-evident how to explain it, that will be true for Perek Dalet and Hay, for the fourth and fifth chapters. In the sixth chapter, which we haven't read yet, the pattern is going to be broken, and I'm not 100% sure how to deal with it. But nevertheless, it's so compelling in the fourth and fifth chapters that I think it's worthwhile pointing it out, and then we'll let it fall as it may in the sixth parak. So, if you turn back to Parak Dalet, chapter 4, let's start with Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. I'm going to run quickly over here and pick out the important phrases. Parak Dalet, chapter 4, Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. This is the first reference, Tzugzunt, of the Aron, of the Ark, when the Jews say, we lost the war, what should we do to win the war? And they come up with this brilliant idea of, let's take from Shiloh the Aron. Now the Aron is referred to as Aron Bris Hashem, the Ark of the Covenant of Hashem. And in the next Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, when they actually take it, it says they took the Aron Bris Hashem. They took the Ark of the Covenant of Hashem. In the next Pasuk, verse 5, it says, and it was when the Aron Bris Hashem came to the camp, and the Jews let out this great blow of the shofar because of this great news that they now had the Aron Bris Hashem.
Oh,
you're right. In the previous one, yes. In the previous one, it does say, that's true. I'm sorry. In Pasuk Dalet, thank you for pointing that out. In Pasuk Dalet, it says that the Bnei Eli were there when they in Shiloh, along with the when they took the Aron Bris Hashem, and it says they were there with the Aron Bris HaElokim. Now there it doesn't use Hashem; it does say the Aron of the Covenant, but there it uses Hashem's other name, the name Elokim. In Pasuk Hey, verse 5, it reverts back to Aron Bris Hashem. Then in Pasuk Vav, verse 6. It says that the Plishtim heard the Trua, and then they found out that the Aron Hashem had come to the Machane. It doesn't say the Aron Bris Hashem. It leaves out the word covenant. They had found out that the Aron Bris Hashem had come to the camp. In Pasuk Zayin, it says the Plishtim were very scared because they said, Ba Elokim ala Machane. Now we translated then, and I'm not changing from that, that this means the power has come to the Machane. We explained that the Plishtim, they don't believe in Hashem being the only power that there is. They believe that Hashem is the super God, and they call him Elokim, power. And they say in Pasuk Ches as well, who will save us from this power? This is the power that struck the Egyptians. That's just referring to Hashem. It's not referring to the Aron itself. However, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, when they actually take the ark, it says in verse 11, Varon Elokim Nilkach. So no longer does it say bris, it doesn't say covenant anymore. And now it says the ark of Elokim, not of Hashem. And that remains consistent throughout the rest of the perek. In Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, it says, Aron Ho'elokim. And in Pasuk Yud Zayin, it says, Aron Ho'elokim, verse 17. And in Pasuk Yud Tes, verse 19, Aron Ho'elokim. in Pasuk Chafal 21, Aron Hu Elokim, and in Pasuk Chafes 22, Aron Hu Elokim. So where we had originally called Aron Bris Hashem, with one reference to Aron Bris Hu Elokim, but it said Bris still, then one reference to Aron Hashem, and then it switches to Aron Hu Elokim, consistently. Moving into Parakeh chapter 5, which deals with, as we did last week, the consequences to the Plishtim for taking the Aron. So, Pasuk Aleph verse 1, Aron Hu Elokim. And Pasuk Beis verse 2, Aron Hu Elokim. Again. In Pasuk Gimel, curiously, it says that Dagon had fallen down to the ground in front of Aron Hashem, not Elokim. And similarly in Pasuk Dalid, verse 4, it says Aron Hashem again, with Dagon having fallen down. In but then, when you go to Pasuk Zion, verse 7, when the Plishtim are finally realizing that this Aron is too much for them, they call it Aron Elokei Yisrael. Aron?
No, Pasuk, sorry?
Pasuk Zion, verse 7. The Aron of the God of the Jews. And they say that again in Pasuk Ches, verse 8. Aron Elokei Yisrael. Twice in Pasuk Ches, verse 8. And in Pasuk Yud, it goes back to Aron Hu Elokim twice, leaving out Yisrael. And then at the end of that, it has those three references in Pasuk Yud, verse 10. Aron Hu Elokim, Aron Hu Elokim, and then Aron Elokei Yisrael. And finally, again in Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, Aron Hu Elokei Yisrael. So there is a pattern here. It's pretty consistent, starting with Aron Bris Hashem, with one exception, moving to, again with one other exception, moving to Aron Hu Elokim, and then with two exceptions, sticking with Aron Hu Elokim, two exceptions where it says Aron Hashem. Now, the difference between saying Hashem and Elokim, we talked about this several times, but one major difference is Hashem, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, is generally the name of Hashem that's associated with Rachamim, with mercy, and Elokim is the name of Hashem that's generally associated with Din, with judgment. But besides that, which name would we say is the more intimate name of Hashem? Is it Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei or is it Elokim? So Yud-Kei Vav-Kei is the more intimate name. Elokim, as we've said, just means power. In fact, in the Chumash itself, the word Elohim, which in this case is not a name of Hashem, is used to mean judges. Jewish judges in a court are called Elohim. The Hashem says to Moshe, Re'en esaticha Elohim leparo. I've made you a power over Paro. The word Elohim does not have to be a name of Hashem. It can be a name of Hashem because it means power. And when it's referring to Hashem, we don't say it with a hey unless we're saying it in shul. We say Elohim because it's a name of Hashem. And of course, in a bracha, we say bracha to Hashem Elokeinu. We say the name of Hashem there, using the word Elohim to refer to Hashem. But it doesn't have to refer to Hashem. But the name Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, that name is specific to Hashem. That is specific to Hashem. The I just want to bring out this point. I'll tell you an interesting thing. This is a digression, but I think you'll find it very interesting. In the Beis HaMikdash, there were families that worked for generations for the Beis HaMikdash on various aspects of the service in the Beis HaMikdash. One family, for example, was the family that prepared the ketores, the incense. And the family that did so had the special recipe of the ketores and refused to divulge it. So the Gemara first says that they are remembered for bad, for evil, because they should have, how come they didn't tell anybody? They hoarded it for themselves. But the Gemara then retracts that and says that no, they're not remembered for bad because they had a good reason for keeping it for themselves, because they didn't want the recipe for the Ketores to be misused for idolatry. So they wanted it only used for Hashem, so they held on to that recipe. They didn't give it away. But the Gemara says there was one family that is remembered for bad. One person. Because he was able, he had an unbelievably talented ability to write. He was able to hold 4 quills between his fingers, between the 5 fingers, and write, manipulating his fingers, he was able to write Yud and a Hey and a Vav and a Hey, Hashem's name. Mm-hmm. He was able to write it simultaneously, all 4 letters simultaneously, manipulating the 4 quills. An incredible act. So he was able to do that. Now, why is that a special thing? I don't know, we can discuss, that's a separate discussion. Why is that? Apparently, that is considered to be a super special way to write the name of Hashem, to do it all four letters simultaneously. But he wouldn't teach that either. He wouldn't instruct others how to do it. And he's remembered for bad, because there, you can't argue that maybe it will be used for Avodah Zarah, for idolatry, because the name Yud Kei Vav Kei is only Hashem. It doesn't mean anything else. It is Hashem's intimate name, or one of His intimate names. And therefore, it can only mean Him. So you can't be worried that that will be used for some pagan worship, because Yud Kei Vav Kei is, by definition, Hashem.
But could it be used for magic?
I guess.
Can't that name, if used in a certain way, or is it only the 72-letter name that can be used to bring up different things?
It's not that name. Most Mefarshim, most commentaries say it's one of the other longer names of Hashem. There's a 42-letter name, a 72-letter name, whatever the name of Hashem is.
The Chet HaEgel, it was a longer name.
That's what most commentaries say. So, the Yud Kei Vav Kei is the more intimate name of Hashem. I can't say it's the intimate name of Hashem. By definition, there is no intimacy with Hashem, because we can't know Him for what He really is, because He's the Creator and we are only created. We can't possibly know Him that well. But whatever we are able to grasp is contained in the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. So the difference between using Yud Kei Vav Kei and using Elohim is, first of all, Rachamim, mercy, versus judgment, Din. And second of all, it's a more intimate name. So initially, the Aron, the Ark, is called the Aron Bris Hashem. It's the Ark of the Covenant of Hashem. What do you mean the Covenant? What is a Covenant? What is a Bris? What is a Covenant?
A contract.
A contract. It's an agreement between two sides. And the Aron, the Ark, is a sign of the Covenant between us and Hashem. We have a Covenant. He gave us a Torah, which He expects us to keep, and in turn, He treats us as His special nation. He has a special relationship with us. That is a bind that we share with Hashem, and it's special between us. And the Aron, the Ark, is one of those symbols of the covenant. In the second Beis HaMikdash, in the second temple, when they didn't have the Aron, then that was a sign that the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence, wasn't really there, not in the same way as it was in the first Beis HaMikdash. Similarly, as we explained, when the Plishtim got hold of the Ark, that was a slap in the face to the Jewish people, because it was a sign that Hashem was in some way allowing Himself to be usurped, or allowing the Jews to be usurped as the ones who have the Aron. So initially it's called the Aron Bris Hashem, because that's what it normally should be called. The full name would be the Ark of the Covenant of Hashem. But once the Jews now use it at war, they take it to war, then it becomes downgraded, and it becomes only the Aron HaElokim. The Aron HaElokim, the God of Judge, the Aron, the Ark of Elohim. Elohim is a less intimate name of Hashem, indicating less of a relationship with Hashem, and also a name for judgment. The Jews were judged in a terrible way. Many Jews were killed, and the Aron was taken. And then when the Plishtim get the Aron, now the Plishtim are being severely judged for having the Aron. With the exception being in Perikei, in chapter 5, when they first put it in the same room as Dagon, And in the two successive psukim, the two successive verses, where we find Dagod fallen over in front of Aron Hashem.
What pasuk is?
In Pasuk Gimel, Pasuk Dal, verse 3 and verse 4,
yeah.
In Parakeh chapter 5.
Yeah.
There it doesn't say Aron Ha'elokim, it says Aron Hashem. Now I don't believe that it says Aron Hashem because it's invoking mercy. I don't believe that's why it says it. It seems to me it says Aron Hashem because it is invoking the more intimate name of Hashem. He's not just an Elohim. He's not just another power. That's what the Plishtim thought. The Plishtim thought he's just a superpower. But in fact, it's not so. He is the only power. And therefore, when he shows that Dagon is nothing, and it falls on its face the first time, the second time it falls on its face and breaks apart, it uses Aron Hashem to... They're not saying Aron Hashem. The Plishtim don't say the words Aron Hashem. This is the narrator writing that it fell in front of the Aron Hashem, in front of the Ark of Hashem, showing or emphasizing that Hashem is the only power. There is no other power in the world. If you just say Aron Ha'elokim, well, there's a superpower and there could be lesser powers. But Hashem, He's it. There is only one. Hashem connotes Hashem Echad, that He's the only power that there is. Yeah. Yes. This, I mean, in those...
Terrible yes. Trouble with this.
In their day, as we've said many times, before the Anshei Knesset HaGadol, the men of the Great Assembly, removed the drive for idolatry, that was the struggle. Do I believe only in Hashem, or do I believe there are other powers in the world that are perhaps lesser but independent? That was a real struggle. It was a real difficult thing for a person to feel that Hashem is Echad. Echad doesn't only mean that He is one; it also means that He has no parts. He is a one. There is only He is a unity. There is nothing else. He doesn't have different separate parts of Him. The one exception in this whole description is what was mentioned, what Dr. Farhi mentioned, that in regard to Chasmi and Pinchas, back in Perek Dalet in chapter 4, where it says in Pasuk Dalet verse 4, it says, there were the two sons of Eli with the Aron Bris Ho'elokim, with the Aron of the covenant of Elohim. So there it's still using the word Bris, covenant, because it's still with the Jews. There, it seems to me the reason why it says Elohim is because it mentions Chofni and Pinchas. And that would be because of judgment, because they're about to be killed. This is the manifestation of the prophecy that Shmuel had gotten that the sons of Eli are going to be killed. So I think this is a pretty consistent pattern with the Aron and how it is referred to. Now, as I mentioned at the outset, in Perek Vav, chapter 6, which we're about to start, we're going to see the pattern is hard to maintain, and there'll be some questions over here exactly why it is called the different things, and I don't have an answer, so I'll point it out as we go along, but I'm not going to suggest answers right now because I don't have a consistent way of doing it, but I do believe that this would be the approach, at least for Prakim, Dalet, and Hay, chapters 4 and 5. Perek Vav, chapter 6. Vayhi Aron Hashem, and we have now it changed to Aron Hashem, Bistei Plishtim Shiva Chodashim. The Aron of Hashem was in the fields of the Plishtim for 7 months. Vayikru Plishtim Lakoanim Vlakosmim Lemar. And the Plishtim called to their priests and to their sorcerers, saying, Mana se l'Aron Hashem. What shall we do to the Aron of Hashem? Now this to me is the greatest curiosity, because until now it's only a narrative. But here that the Plishtim themselves should use the name of Hashem, that's already something else. It seems that they've recognized something that they didn't recognize before. Now, it's not that they all became believers. The Plishtim do not all convert at this point, and they certainly don't all decide, well, we're not going to bother the Jews again. The Plishtim are a thorn in the Jews' side for hundreds of years. But they do refer to here as the Aron Hashem, as the Ark of Hashem. So what should we do to the Aron of Hashem? Hodi'unu, let us know. How shall we send it to its place? We need to get rid of this Aron, but how do we do it? How do we do it in a way that will stop all of the destruction that we have endured? They recognize that you can't just, you know, send it UPS.
Mm-hmm.
They recognize you've got to do something in an honorable and respectful manner, because whatever anger is being directed against the Plishtim, if you just in a flippant manner, send the Aaron on its way, well, that's not going to remove the anger from you. So it's got to be done properly. They didn't want to know, how do you do it?
Was it outside? It says in the field.
It seems it was outside. It seems it was outside.
What? Excuse me. Why don't they just send it straight back to the Jewish people?
But how do you do it? How do you send it back to the Jewish people? That's the question. Do they carry it back to the Jewish people? Do they wrap it up?
Uh-huh.
Put a little bow around it? Like, what do you do? How do you do it in the most respectful manner?
I see. Okay.
Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Vayomru, and they said, Im mishalchim es aron Elokei Yisrael, so here we go back to the Aron of the God of the Jews, al tishalchu oso rekam, do not send it empty-handed. Ki hashev tashivu lo asham, you need to return to him, you need to give to him, and asham. Asham, in the context of sacrifices, means one of the types of sin offerings, but here it means like a tribute, some sort of as Rashi says, a recognizable object that shows that you recognize that you sinned against the God of the Jews.
Isn't that like when Sarah was taken?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember by whom, but he sent her away with gifts.
Yes, both Paro and Avimelech did, but Avimelech made it more of a point. He said, this is a gift for you because I took you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you need to send and asham, some sort of a sign that you're admitting you did wrong. Az teraf'u, then you will be healed. V'nodam lachem, and it will be known to you. Which means it will be known to you that that he has forgiven you, that you've been healed.
Why don't they use us?
You mean, why don't they include themselves? Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah,
you mean they're still, still at arm's length over here. Yeah, I don't know.
Giving advice about how to make amends.
Yeah, you good point.
Well, speaking to them because they asked.
Yeah,
you
but
should.
We'll know that we did wrong. We'll know that it worked.
Yeah, they're not including themselves in this whole, right?
Lama
lo sasru yado mikem, why should his hand not be removed from you? In other words, listen to what we're saying, and why should you continue to endure this punishment? Why shouldn't you allow his hand to be removed from you? Vayomru, and they said, Maha shama shanashiv lo, what is the tribute, this sign that we should return to him, we should give to him? Vayomru, and they said, Mispar sarnei flishtim, the amount of the leaders of the flishtim, there were 5 sects of Plishtim. The Plishtim were 5 families that developed into 5 distinct, I don't want to call them tribes, but it's a similar idea. There were 5 groups of Plishtim, and they each had a leader. So, the 5 leaders of the Plishtim, Chamisha Tachorei Zahav. Now, I have no idea what this would look like. 5 golden Tachorim. Remember, Tachorim are hemorrhoids. 5 golden hemorrhoids. Because that was what they were punished with. V'chamisha achbarei zahav, and 5 golden mice. Because remember, the mice are the ones that caused the tachorim. Ki magefa achas l'chulam u'lisarnechem. Because there was one magefa, there was one plague for everyone, and for your leaders. So they recognized that it was only one punishment. Even though thousands of plishtim were killed, and thousands more were in terrible affliction, but it was the same affliction. Those who were killed because of the loss of blood, or the infection, or whatever it is that occurred because of this, and those who were afflicted because of this pain. There were no different, it wasn't like there were different punishments on different parts of the plishtim. So since it was all one thing, therefore they said that the asham, the tribute that you give back, needs to reflect that. Va'atisem tzalmei tachoreichem v'tzalmei achbereichem, and you will make images,
statues,
right, of your hemorrhoids and of your mice, hamashchisim et haaretz, that have destroyed the land, unisatem le'elokei Yisrael kavod, and you shall give them to, you'll give to the God of the Jews as an honor,
respect.
Yeah.
Does that sound like they're giving offerings?
It sure does. Ulai yakel es yadom me'aleichem. Maybe he will lighten his hand from upon you, or remove his hand from you. Umeyar Eloheichem, and from on your gods, meaning Dagon, and the other ones, or may I ask the chemin from your land. So no one here is giving up idolatry. No one here is saying, okay, you know, Hashem is in control, let's give it all up. They're saying, send him a gift. So you just see how difficult it is for them to give up their practices. They're not willing to admit that obviously Hashem is in control. They're still fully engaged in idolatry. Yeah.
What kind of gift is your God like?
I mean, they're not bothering to find out what it is Hashem would want.
Yes.
Right. Okay, so they're clearly...
This is at a very low level.
Yes. They're clearly giving what they would respect. Right? It's some sort of a
everybody respects gold and hemorrhoids.
It's gold. It's a statue. Okay, and it is...
There's a lot of them. Glasses.
It's in the image of what they were afflicted with.
But they're still not thinking spiritual at all.
No, they're not thinking spiritual.
That's what I'm saying. It's extremely concrete.
Yes.
Like they're 3 years old.
Well, it's like they're fully engaged in idolatry. That's what they deal with. This is real to them. This is real. This is what they deal with. Okay.
Notice it's nothing live.
Not what?
There's nothing live.
Yeah.
I mean, didn't they give any live things?
Well, we'll see. There are going to be some cows in this, but let's see.
That's to move the thing.
Yeah. The lama sechabdu et levavchem. Why should you make your hearts heavy? Kaasher kibdu Mitzrayim ufaro es libam. So they invoke Egypt and Paro. Why should you make your hearts heavy the same way that Paro and the Egyptians made their hearts heavy? Meaning, why should you refuse to send the Aron, to send the Ark, with this tribute, where Paro refused to do it? Now remember, they came to the Kohanim asking, how do we send it away? So it's not that they didn't want to send away the Aron, but the Kohanim recognized that there was going to be resistance here to part with the gold. That would be resistant.
Yeah.
So he said, why should you become resistant the same way that Paro, now they're pulling out, this is the big guns, because you pull out Paro and the Egyptians, you just went through, remember, they just went through incredible suffering. And now you're going to invoke real suffering and destruction with Paro and the Egyptians. That really scares the Sarni Plish and the heads of the Plish. Let's just finish the verse. Hello, Kasher, he's Alo Bohem. Isn't it the way that he, Hashem, had toyed with them, had mocked them, via Shalchum, and they, the Egyptians, sent away the Jews, via Lechum, and they went. So don't bother. Don't bother trying to hold on to your wealth over here. He, just as he did to the Egyptians until finally they let him go, you're not going to win in the end. He's already made incredible destruction against you. It's only going to get worse. Yes.
How long did it take from the first Makkah till they were released from Egypt?
In Egypt, it seems like it took a year.
It seems so. And here's only 7 months.
Yeah.
And they didn't need 10, they only needed 3 things to happen.
But Hashem didn't harden their heart. Remember, with Egypt, he did. So, I don't know over here, it sounds like the Kohanim they assumed that Paro hardened his own heart. But we know that Hashem hardened Paro's heart.
But you can only harden it in a way you're going anyway.
Yeah.
Fearful of the Aron.
Yes.
They don't. They never seemed to want to do disrespect or harm to the Aron.
Yeah. No. They certainly don't want to do that.
That's a different level.
Yeah. No, they certainly respect the Aron. But remember, they thought it was a good weapon. They thought, we've gotten the super weapon. We've gotten a hold of connection to the super God.
Well, Paro could have thought this will be a great army of Jews, but instead he thought it'll be a great group of slaves.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on how you look at it.
How you manipulate what you have. That's true. Pasuk Zion, verse 7. The Atana, and now. So even with all this, though, they still want to test the waters over here about what's really happening. Look at this. It is astonishing just how much they're holding on to the possibility that this has nothing to do with God. Ve'atah now, kechu va'asu agala chadashachas. Take and make a brand new wagon. Construct a new wagon for this purpose. Ushtei faros alos, and 2 cows. Alos means that they're nursing. that they have young calves. Asher lo ala lehem ol, that they've never carried a yoke. So take two cows that have young calves that have never pulled anything before. So they are untrained cows. Va'asartem es haparos ba'agala, and you shall tie the cows to the wagon. Va'ashevosem b'neihem me'achareihem habaisa, and you shall put their children behind them in the house. In other words, lock up the calves in the stable so that the cows would naturally not want to leave, because their calves that depend on them for food are behind them and calling out to them. So don't let them out. So this is going to be a real test. What will the cows do? Ulekachtem et Aron Hashem, you shall take the Aron of Hashem. Unizatem oso el ha'agala, place it on the wagon. Veis klei hazahav, and the golden utensils that we just told you to make. Asher hashevosem lo Hashem, that you're giving to him as a tribute. Tassimu va'argaz, put it in a box. And argaz is like an Aron. Aron is an ark. And argaz means like a chest. Mitzido, on the side of the Aron. V'shilach temo, so you shall send it v'holach, and it will go. Uriisem, you will see. In derech kivulo ya'ala beis shemesh, if it goes on the way towards the border, going up to Beis Shemesh. Beis Shemesh was the border town next to the Plishtim. If that's what happens, if these cows, against all natural order, they've never pulled anything before, their calves are back in the house, and they still pull this thing in the right direction going to Beis Shemesh, who asalonu es haro'a agdola azos, then it proves that he, God, did to us all this evil. Vimlo, and if not, v'yadanu, we will know, ki lo yado naga banu, that it is not his hand that has touched us, mikrehu hayalanu, it is just happenstance. It is pure
fate.
Right? It's not God. It just happened that way.
Where did they put the iron? On the side?
They put the argaz, yeah. this chest that holds the golden mice and golden techorim.
Right.
They put that in next to the aron, next to the ark.
In a box. So, in the cart.
In the cart. This.
So if the cows keep going, then it's Yad Hashem.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This experiment.
Well,
it really is.
They didn't say that it was. They just said we need to get rid of the aron. That's what they said.
The implication being that
yes.
was bringing destruction.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Rabbi, what were they doing? Like, the first day they put it by Dagon and Dagon fell. The next day it says that...
Hold that again.
Broke.
So what, between that point where the signs were there, and 7 months later, what happened?
Well, it's been on the field now.
Total decimation.
It's been in the field for some.
No, but before that, I mean, there's been terrible pain, suffering, death, all kinds of terrible things.
But couldn't they have, like, stopped it by trying to do this earlier?
I want to ask you a question. If today, I'm not wishing anything on anybody, if today there were, this sort of thing would happen, that there would be some sort of a thing in various cities in the United States, do you think anybody would attribute it to anything spiritual?
Oh, I think there'd be communities that would have fast days and stuff like that if tragedy was hitting their community. I mean, we've had it here before where rabbis...
We would. With the secular world, they would hold on to that it's a plague, it's an infection, it's a disease.
All right.
Whatever, you know.
It's a tsunami.
Right. No one wants to admit.
It's a natural happening, we just have to deal with it.
Right, I don't know what our expectation is. I do have to emphasize that it's not an evolution of man. It's not that people today are any more enlightened than they were. It's that they had a drive for idolatry which was removed, and instead people have a drive for secularism. It's instead of the same group of people today that try not to believe in God or not to deal with God, in their day would be idolaters. Would be worshipping statues, would be slaughtering cows to the golden cabbage and that kind of stuff. That it's the same people. And the same way that we today have the same struggle, we also struggle with with a fervent belief in God. There are times in our lives where we are totally focused on the fact that there is Hashem in the world, and there are times in our lives, even in the same day, where we ignore the fact that Hashem exists. That's possible today because the drive was removed. But that those lapses in our day, when we kind of forget that Hashem exists, in their day would have been replaced with a thought that there's really independent power in the light switch, in the sun, in the moon. That's where our mind would wander to in their day.
Or, I don't know. So, even nowadays, most of the people will not take it so seriously.
Yeah, they took it more seriously. Right. They were definitely affected by what happened with Egypt. It had happened at this point roughly 400 years earlier.
So was it just the history they heard from someone?
Yeah.
Or they were acquainted with Jewish sources?
In Az Yashir we say that Chil Achaz Yoshvei Peloshes, trembling grabbed those who lived in Peloshes.
That's so they heard about that.
Yeah. Yeah, and we know that when the Jews got to Israel and they met Rachav 40 years later, she said, everybody's afraid of you because of what you did to Egypt. And that there was a real fear amongst the nations of the world at that time about what the Jews had happened. But they kept on thinking that was just because the Jews had tapped into this super God, but that super God isn't always there. He isn't always available. Yeah.
Why did they, it's great that they mentioned Paro in Egypt, but why didn't they mention anything about, look, Amalek won the war when they first attacked the Jews, and then look what happened to them later. The Jews
almost decimated right.
them. Like, why don't they bring up other...
I think because Paro and the Egyptians were still the symbol of the whole thing, because that's where Hashem unleashed everything against them. The supernatural plagues and the splitting of the sea, everything was... nobody else endured that. Pasuk... Yud, verse 10. Vayasu ha'anashim came, the men did this. Vayikhu shtei faros alos, they took two cows that were nursing. Vayasu mabo'agala, they tied them to the wagon. Vayasbenehem, and their children, kalu labayis, they locked up in the house. Vayasimu es aron Hashem el ha'agala, and they put the aron of Hashem on the wagon. Vayis ha'argaz, and the chest. Vase Akbarei Hazav and the golden mice, Vest Salme Techorehem and their statues of their Techorim. Vaisharna Haparos Baderech. And literally this means, and the cows went straight on the road. Yashar means straight. We'll come back to the word in a minute though. The cows went straight on the road. Al Derech Beis Shemesh, on the road to Beis Shemesh. Bimsila Achas, on one path, Hoku Haloch Vigao. They went as they were mooing is the right word.
Lowing,
okay. Velo Sori Yominu Smol, they did not turn right or left. Vesane Plishtim Hochim Achareim, and the heads of the Plishtim went after them, Ad Gvul Beis Shemesh until the border of Beis Shemesh. So it went directly, there was no ambiguity here, they went directly to Beis Shemesh. The Gemara says, Vayisharna, besides having the word Yashar in it, which means straight, also has the word Shir in it. And it says, the Gemara says, that the cows sang Shira as they went. And not only did the cows sing Shira, but the children of the cows, the calves that were locked in the house, also sang Shira as their mothers took the Aron back. So there was a supernatural thing that happened that they sang Shira. The Gemara says, what Shira did they sing? There is a difference of opinion. There are about six opinions in the Gemara. Some of those Shiros you are familiar with, some of them are less well known, but the first opinion in the Gemara is they sang Az Yashir.
Wow.
This week's parsha. Mm-hmm. There are other opinions, but that is one of the opinions in the Gemara, that the cows sang Az Yashir as they went. So
the cows are sure at a much higher level than they are.
Well, the cows know. They know free will, and they know the truth. Pasuk Gimel, verse 13. Ubeis Shemesh Kotchim Kitzirchitim Boemek, the people of Beis Shemesh were harvesting the wheat harvest in the valley. Vayisu es Einehem, and they lifted their eyes. Vayiru, and they saw Es Aron, they saw the ark. Imagine, it had been away for 7 months. It was one of the most devastating blows the Jews had ever had. And they're out there harvesting, and all of a sudden they look up, and there is the Aron. Vayis Mechuliros, and they were thrilled, they were happy to see. V'ha'agalah ba'a el sedeh Yehoshua beis HaShimshi, and the agalah, the wagon came to the field of Yehoshua beis HaShimshi. This is not the same Yehoshua that lived 350 years earlier who took the Jews into Eretz Yisrael. This is a different Yehoshua. And v'tamod sham, and it stopped there. So if it stopped there, obviously, if it's so miraculous the way the whole thing is going, then if it stopped there, that was also symbolic. It was supposed to stop there. The Shem Evan Gedola, there was a large stone. So what did the people of Beis Shemesh do? Vayivaku es atzeho agala. They broke down the wood of the wagon. Bez haparos, and the cows, helu ola la Hashem, they brought up as a sacrifice to Hashem, which was the appropriate thing to do. The cows that were singing, they were singing in the service of Hashem, and the ultimate way for a cow to serve Hashem would be to become a karbon, and they offer it to Hashem as a thanksgiving for getting the Aron back. V'alevim horidu es Aron Hashem, and the Levim took down the Aron of Hashem, v'es ha'agaz, and the chest, asher yitzah that was with it, asher bochle ha'zahav, that in it was the golden utensils, v'yasimu el ha'evan ha'gedola, they put it on the large stone, v'anshe Beis Shemesh, helu olos, and the people of Beis Shemesh brought up more sacrifices, v'yizbechu zvachim, again they offered more sacrifices, v'yom ahu la'ashem on that day to Hashem. V'chamisha sarni plishtim, and the five heads of the plishtim row, they saw, so now they registered everything, they saw exactly what happened, v'yashuvu ekron, v'yom ahu, they went back to Ekron on that day. You would expect after that the plishtim would become believers, the Plishtim would become supporters of the Jewish people, that there would be no more enmity because this is clearly the people of Hashem. Nothing doing.
The fact that they returned tells me that they didn't. It was like
right.
Orpah, she turns around.
Right.
Had they gone and said, we now realize we did wrong, where do we go from here? It would have been, but they turned back.
That's right. There was
like,
no.
Well, twice, every time you turn back, it's not good.
Right. That's right. Yud Zayin 17, Ve'ele Techorei HaZav, and these golden Techorim, Asher Hishivu Plishtim Asham HaHashem, that the Plishtim had returned as a tribute to Hashem. So now we're going to list the five heads of the Plishtim. La'ashdod Echad, we're actually going to list the cities. For Ashdod, there was one. La'aza Echad, Aza is Gaza. Right, an ayin in Hebrew is ayin, so it's really begin gimel. La'ashkelon echad, le'gas echad, le'ekron echad. So one for each of these cities. The achbarei hazav and the golden mice misbar kol arei plishtim. There was the amount of all the cities of the plishtim, even though the priests had told them to only make five mice, they made one mouse for every city of the Plishtim.
Not taking any chances.
I guess not. V'chameshes haseronim, for the five heads. And all the cities are the five heads. Me'ir Mibzar, from the fortified cities. V'ad Kofra Perazi, and until the unfortified villages. V'ad Avel HaGedola, and until the place called Avel HaGedola. Asher Hinichu Aleha Es Aron Hashem, that they put in it the Aron of Hashem. Avel HaGedola means the large stone, and it's spelled Avel instead of Evan. It should have been spelled Evan HaGedola, the large stone. Instead, there's a Lamed for Avel. What does Avel mean?
Morning.
Morning, as in Avelus. And that is, unfortunately, what's about to happen. Arayom HaZeh, that stone is until this day, Bistei Yehoshua Beis HaShimshi, in the field of Yehoshua, from Beis Shemesh. So that is where it ended up. However, unfortunately, Vayach, the Anshei Beis Shemesh, he struck against the people of Beis Shemesh, Ki Ro'u Baron Hashem, for they saw in the Aron of Hashem, they did not treat the Aron HaShem with the correct respect. As much as they were happy, and they took the Aron, and they put it on the stone, and they brought the Karbonos and all that, but nevertheless, there was a lacking in how they did it. And therefore, they were struck. Vayach ba'am shivim ish, and he, HaShem, struck against the people 70 men, chamishim elef ish, 50,000 men. So, was it 70 or was it 50,000? Or was it 50,000 and 70? The Gemara says either it was 70 men who were each worthy of 50,000 men, that they were 70 men who were equal to 50,000 men, or it was 50,000 men who were each equal to 70 men of the Sanhedrin. So, in other words, it wasn't the rank and file that were struck, it was the leadership, the great ones, who were killed. Vayis'ablu ha'am, and the nation went into mourning. Kihika Hashem ba'am makah gedolah, for Hashem struck against the nation a terrible strike. Vayomru anshei Beishemesh, and the men of Beishemesh said, Mi yuchal lamod lifnei Hashem ho Elokim HaKadosh Hazeh? Who can stand before this Hashem, the Elokim HaKadosh, the Holy God, this Holy God? They recognized it's not the Aron that is doing this, it's Hashem that's doing it. The Elmi Yaleh Me'olenu, and to whom can it go up from ourselves? Meaning, who could take the Aron now? We don't want to just pass the Aron off the way the Plishtim did and get someone else to get hurt. We want someone to take the Aron who will be worthy of taking the Aron, and there won't be any more pain. Vayishlechu malachim el yoshvei Kiryas Yearim leimar, and they sent messengers to those who dwell in Kiryas Yearim, saying, Heshivu plishtim es Aron Hashem, the plishtim have returned the Aron of Hashem, redu, come down, ha'alu osu alechem, bring it up to you. They recognized that the people living in Kiryas Yearim were fit to have the Aron in their midst. And that was what we'll pick up with next week. We will see
the Eli or someone in the basement.
Shiloh had been destroyed.
Shiloh
had been destroyed. There was no longer a place like Shiloh. Now, the next place...
But isn't Eli still around?
Eli's dead.
What about Shmuel?
Chafni and Pinchas are dead. Shmuel is the only one alive that is still a leader of the Jewish people. So, they needed a place to put the Aron. They didn't have email to, you know... Right. They couldn't text Shmuel and say, come on. So they had to, right? So they needed a place to put the Aron until they could figure out what to do. So we're gonna see that the people of Kiryas Yearim, and particularly one person or one family in Kiryas Yearim, actually were perfectly suited to take care of the Aron, and all of this decimation is going to stop. So here, although the people of Beit Shemesh did decent things, but Hashem is very exacting, especially when it comes to the Aron. The Gemara says, what did they do wrong? The Gemara says that when they were harvesting, why does the Pasuk tell us they were harvesting the wheat when they saw the Aron? The Gemara says that at least one explanation is that they didn't immediately drop what they were doing. They finished up the harvest and then went to the Aron. It wasn't like, the Aron's here, forget everything else, and we go. So perhaps we'll talk a little bit more about that next time if we remember, but we'll start Mir Tashem Parag Zayin, Chapter 7 next time.
Thank you
for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the Donate link. Thank you very much.